Township of McKellar regular meeting of council for December 16th, 2025 in order. Start with roll call.
Counselor Debbie Zulak.
Counselor Dick Rodman.
Counselor Mike Heckinen.
Clerk Administrator Kelly Britton.
Deputy Clerk Mary Smith.
Fire Chief Robert Morrison.
Mayor David Moore. Any declarations of pecuniary and or personal interest in the general nature thereof? Hearing none. Resolution 25-534, moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Ryland. Be resolved that Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby approve the agenda for this regular meeting of council as amended to, number one, add item 20.3, Circular Materials Depot Operations Agreement, and number two, move items 17.2 and 17.4 to precede item 11.1, Delegations and Presentations. Discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. In the spirit of reconciliation and cooperation, we wish to acknowledge that the land in which we gather is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabeg and the Mississauga people. Its boundaries fall within the Robinson Huron Treaty of 1850 and the Williams Treaty of 1923. We are grateful to live here, and we thank all the generations of people who have taken care of this land for thousands of years. To honor the suffering of Indigenous people and the love and wisdom they've carried for thousands of years, we pledge to work in community and harmony with each other and the environment we inhabit, and work towards truth and reconciliation. Okay, we've moved the agenda around a bit, as you noticed. So I'm thinking you want to do the resolution first, and then okay, and then we'll have Fire Chief Rob Morrison speak. So we have resolution 25-535. Moved by Councilor Keckinen, second by Councilor Zulak. Whereas the township is required to replace its self-contained breathing apparatus, SCBAs, by August 2026, as the current equipment is approximately 20 years old and no longer eligible for recertification. And whereas staff issued a request for proposal to obtain pricing for 2026 and to secure delivery timelines for the apparatus in order to maintain uninterrupted fire protection services. Now, therefore, be it resolved that Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar hereby receives report FD-2025-13, self-contained breathing apparatus request for proposal from Fire Chief Robert Morrison. Further, the Council awards request for proposal number 2025-16 to M&L Supply for the supply of 16 self-contained breathing apparatus, SCBAs, 32 SCBA cylinders, 24 face pieces, and 2 fast attack RIT packs in the amount of $211,558 plus HST of $27,502.54 for a total of $239,060.54. And further, the council authorizes staff to place the order immediately in order to secure firm pricing with M&L Supply, with the understanding that payment will not be made until delivery of the equipment in 2026. Normally open for discussion, but we'll turn it over to Rob.
You've all received the report from the RFP. We had two bidders who submitted for the RFP, M&L and EJ Stone. M&L was the ones who came in with the exact specs that we were looking for. Our objective in this... our objective in this is obviously to replace the aged SCBA system that we have, which is an old MSA system, with a more current, more modern, and safer system that we use to breathe in any kind of compromised atmosphere. Through our RFP, the best option came in with M&L for a Scott brand pack. Scott brand packs I have used for the past 26 years, so I was not upset to see that this was the winning bid. It is also the type and brand of pack that everyone except for Whitestone of our mutual aid partners does use. And when we use them, one of the benefits of having a Scott brand pack in this is that, well, it was evident on Saturday night, and we all got the email about the Saturday night fire that McKellar attended to support McDougall. McDougall called for mutual aid simply for from Perry Sound simply for extra SCBA cylinders. So, because they had enough manpower with us and McDougall there, they just needed more air packs. So, it makes us more effective as a group to go with the same brand as everybody else. Okay? So, the least expensive option, luckily, was M&L at $239,060.54. The original proposed budget for this purchase, which was derived from quotations from the industry, was $252,352. But now, obviously, being reduced to $239,060, we, as of today, have been informed that we were successful in receiving our OFM grant. So we have $30,000 to put towards the purchase of SCBA cylinders, which is fantastic. Dropping it to $209,060.54, and we have $75,000 in SCBA savings that we've put aside over the last few years, knowing that this occasion would be coming. So our new cost to the township is $134,060.54. So which is down from the originally projected cost to the township of $147,352.
Under budget. Sounds good.
Yes, it's always good when that happens. We're thrilled with the results of this. We are very excited. We had every manufacturer, major manufacturer, come up and actually do a presentation night to all of our firefighters. We got to try them all out, and Scott was the one that we wanted the most. And as I said, I have 26 years experience with this brand. I'm very comfortable with it. I think it's the right thing to do, especially in light of our mutual aid. So with council support, I would love nothing more than to be able to make a phone call tomorrow and have the packs placed on order.
Excellent. Any questions from council?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
Councilor Ryan.
Can you do with the old ones?
So the old ones, well, they are not good for any industry in Canada. Private industry may be able to use them. We could try to sell them. Honestly, the good karma of donating them to Firefighters Without Borders, where they can be brought to Kenya or brought to South America for a department that doesn't have to live by the NFPA standards, essentially. They can get some use out of them until they're no longer repairable.
I wasn't thinking we'd make money out of
No, no. Yeah. So that is the intention, is to create a donation, much as we did with other old equipment to Firefighters Without Borders.
Sure.
So,
okay. Good. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Well, thanks very much, Rob, for being so proactive and getting a good price and for the grant as well. And all of those are looking really good. Yeah. So I'll call the question then to council. All of those in favor? None opposed? Carry.
Just have your mic
there, of course, next. The amendment? Did you want me to speak to the amendment, though? Or did you know?
Oh, right, yeah. We can do that, too.
It does. I can sit for a bit too if you need to.
No, we'll move that up.
So we've got this is 17.4 then?
Yes.
Okay. So resolution 25-536, moved by Councilor Kekkonen, second by Councilor Zulak. The result of the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby received the month end status reports for October and November 2025 from Fire Chief Robert Morrison for information purposes. Discussion? I don't know whether Rob wants to hit highlights or they have questions. It's very detailed. That's good.
If you have questions, I'm more than happy to answer them. As of today, our call number is 140 this afternoon. And so we still have a few weeks left in the year, so we'll see where we end up.
And the staffing wise, you're sort of replacing with those who are leaving, is that?
Yes. Okay. We've had some turnover, we've had a little bit of attrition. We do have two brand new people who are very excited to start their firefighter certification training come January. They will almost be ready for the July deadline for the department, but the department itself is in fantastic shape in terms of, I spoke with the OFM today, and we're ready to go for July 1st. In the process of finishing our final component, which is our hazmat operations.
Excellent. You mentioned that email that came through from McDougall, the fire chief. As far as response time as well, he was quite impressed with that.
He was very happy. He was thrilled with our response. The firefighters that attended the scene were all very influential in the outcome of it. Unfortunately, just the nature of the business and especially with the age and so forth and the condition of the structure that was involved, it is a total loss. But we got out of there without anybody having any injuries or anything like that. Nothing was spread, but it didn't involve any further buildings. So we're quite happy with the outcome as it is. And you know, we do our best to train together. Our two new people who are starting in January take part in a mutual aid training group. So our firefighters regularly see firefighters from other communities and we help each other out. We train together so that when we work together in a call like Saturday night, everybody knows each other's name, everybody knows they're on the same level, there's a lot less confusion, and a lot better understanding as to what the process is.
Excellent. As far as the telecommunications tower?
Telecommunications tower is now officially done.
Oh, okay.
The final cladding was finished. The missing piece, which was the safety climbing, was affixed to the top of the tower for maintenance purposes. Now it is a safe to climb tower. It's fully operational, and our staff have been absolutely thrilled with the increase in reception that they get. We have one gentleman who lives in Broadmoor, Captain Summers, who would have to come out of his house in order to answer a radio call previously, and now he can receive it in the basement of the church in town where he is a pastor. So it's quite an improvement for sure. And as well, with the conversion to digital, we have the opportunity to have our roads department, which I know Tom's very happy about because it increases the safety of his plow drivers, areas that they can't get cell reception and so forth. They can now be on the digital radio channel as well, and they'll get fantastic coverage from the township.
Excellent.
We already own it. It's of no expense to him other than the programming of his radios, I believe. Yes.
Okay, any further questions, discussion?
The last thing I would actually, I'd love to mention in public is that we did have one member of our department, his name is Jeff Castronaro, who received a Brian Maduke Award, which is fantastic. It goes to his dedication as a volunteer. Jeff is a part-time resident of McKellar with a cottage on the lake, but he has always wanted to be a volunteer firefighter. So given the fact that he's up here all summer long, I gave him the opportunity. He sees that opportunity. He shows up. He's probably there now. He shows up every Tuesday, drives up from the city for training, and he's up every weekend because he just loves being up north. And I'm sure he would make this his full-time residence if he could. But yes, it's an award that recognizes his dedication to the community, his dedication to the fire department, his willingness to learn and his willingness to teach other firefighters the skills that he has, because he was a firefighter in a previous life many, many years ago. So it was a great honor to be able to present him with that award at the mutual aid meeting last week. And we will have a plaque in the hallway here that will have his name on it for a year, and recognizing him as the 2025 winner of the Brian Maduke Award. Brian Maduke was the former fire chief of the township of McDougal. And it was named in his honor because of his dedication to the job. So very, very happy for Jeff and pleased that we can give that a home for a year.
Nice.
Excellent. Okay, further discussion. I'll call the question on this. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Slight adjustment. We have resolution 25-537, moved by Councillor Kekkonen, second by Councillor Ryan. We resolve the Council of the Corporation of Township McKellar does hereby move item 21.1 to precede item 11.1, delegations and presentations. So that one deals with the fire department bylaw.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes, so we have proposed an amendment to our establishing and regulating bylaw, which lays out the services that the fire department provides to the community. It lays them out in terms of the scope of the services, limitations of the services, and how essentially how far we'll go. In the last, on December 5th, at the last chief's meeting for the area, the Parry Sound District Paramedic Service was present, and they presented us with a of an SOG, a policy that they have created. The policy has apparently been loosely enforced since 2018. However, it's now being enforced by the service where, and I'm sorry, you don't, I don't think you have a copy of the actual policy, right, in your package. The policy of the Perry Sound District Paramedic Service is now that their paramedics will not attend rural, excuse me, remote patient rescues. They will not no longer go on snowmobiles. They will no longer go in boats. They will not walk beyond a certain distance into the bush. And so this is particularly relevant to us because we have, you know, significant amount of snowmobile trails in the area. And even just last year, we had a gentleman who came off a snowmobile and broke his finger. We had to go in, and we used public snowmobiles to help us access it. And Captain Summers, who lived down the road from it, brought his, and it helped us get into the bush and stabilize the person and have him come out. And we had a paramedic that gave us assistance for that. It's been very loose since 2018 because a good portion of their service members grew up here. They're just used to being on these vehicles. They're used to the backcountry. They're used to having, you know, that sort of remote access. Less and less of their members are from the area, essentially, and used to the being on these machines or going out on the bay in the winter, stuff like that. And so there's a degree of discomfort that they have. Unfortunately, what they've done by saying, absolutely, we're not going to be doing it anymore, without the express consent of the on-duty supervisor that they have, is they've effectively attempted to put the liability of patient stabilization and so forth on the fire departments. This, as you can sort of expect, went over like a lead balloon at the chief's meeting, and we immediately, just because of the time of year, proposed that we would make this change to the bylaw, and now the chiefs are actually, we're working together to create proper wording and a proper policy for the entire West Perry Sound area, as well as investigating different forms of training to allow us to still offer this as a service. But as of right now, our members here in McKellar have immediately been made known that any spinal injury, let's say, which we are not technically qualified to remove the helmet, stabilize the neck, and package the patient for removal, EMS is, but we are not, and we don't have the equipment to do so, we are no longer to provide that service. So while we can go into the bush, while we can help to stabilize the patient, comfort the patient, keep them warm, offer services like that, unless EMS is prepared to walk it into the bush with us to then stabilize that patient and come out with them, we unfortunately have no choice, since we don't want to assume this liability ourselves, but to go through the OPP and to call in Trenton, and they would show up with their search and rescue team. This obviously could add 3 hours to the call. So this is where patient assistance will now be our main focus in this. So immediately we have put a change in place, which will be again amended once we have an agreed upon language and agreed upon policy amongst the fire departments in the area. But the language that we are proposing, it is changing from in Schedule B, the sentence, "The fire department shall provide the following services," to "The fire department shall provide the following services and programs only when response of adequately trained personnel in sufficient numbers is available." So having one person who is essentially qualified doesn't do anymore. We need to have essentially sufficient numbers of people in order to effect a proper extrication and a proper rescue. In my mind, this was the smart move to make immediately. We do have other areas which in the bylaw which talk about limited service and so forth, but the placement of this right at the top of Schedule B, I felt, made it very plain and simple and easy to understand for any member of the public or any other person who might be looking into this to understand that we can't provide all services at all times in all cases. Okay? Much like we don't respond to island properties or water access only properties within our bylaw. This clearly spells out that there's a limitation.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
So is that a typical policy for other fire departments and EMS and land ambulance in the province of Ontario?
This is, as I said, they've loosely had this insert in place since 2018. Now, I guess, just as a point of fact, where they have had some situations where, let's say, they would show up in Britain and have to go out to an island property in order to bring a patient back to the ambulance, and they were getting into a craft that was, let's say, less than ideal and probably a little bit sketchy. It just depends on what the fire department had available, right? But because they can't just say we're going to use our judgment on a certain vessel, like, they won't even get onto the hovercraft that Carling offers, which is a commercially certified vehicle now, because according to 5.7 of their bylaw, they have to be in care and control of the speed of the vehicle as well, much like an ambulance, right? So it really complicates things. I would assume that much the way that we've operated for the last several years, most departments in Northern Ontario especially would operate in this manner, because you're dealing with people who are very comfortable in these situations. You're dealing with people who are very comfortable with the crafts that they're operating in, and the snowmobiles and the ATVs and so forth. As we have a younger generation of paramedic who have probably come up from Toronto or so forth and moved up here to get the job, they don't have that degree of comfort, is what we're finding. They don't have that exposure. So it is a policy that I think you're going to see creep its way across, especially as more and more of these things become more public. Yes.
So the next question would be, since you had indicated that the calls would be forwarded to the OPP and then essentially to Trenton Search and Rescue, is Trenton Search and Rescue being notified that there's these changes being made so they can anticipate maybe the possibility of increased calls to this area?
This was a topic of discussion again at the Chiefs meeting, and yes, the mutual aid coordinators for our area, which are the Chief of Parry Sound and the Chief of Carling, have essentially taken up the reins on notifying the proper authorities and continuing discussions with ambulance. McDougall's chief and myself are looking at different forms of training that we can have access to, which would maybe allow us to perform these services in the right conditions with the right equipment under a base hospital sort of supervision. So there's a lot of balls in the air, and there's a lot of trying to figure things out right now. This was not something that we were expecting at the meeting. It kind of got sprung on us, but we're sort of trying to work our way through it. In the meantime, our amendment has been shared with Whitestone, with McDougall and Seguin. They've all made their own amendments that are much like this, and then as we get proper language and access to training sorted out over the next few months or a year, however long it takes to find the appropriate action here, then we will all collectively change the language and adjust our own in our bylaws as such.
Okay, thank you.
No problem.
We had a presentation a while back, Gordon Lane, the local rescue group. Are they involved at all?
I'm sorry.
Gordon Lane, it was they did a presentation at the Municipal Association and also one to Council. They're a search and rescue, in a sense, in the area, a local one. And they can transport, apparently, because we asked that question. Are they involved in this at all?
I'm not familiar with Gordon Lane. Bidjimatoon is the, and they're a volunteer organization. But they would have I would say, less opportunity to transport than us. They don't have certification to be able to spinally immobilize people and so forth. They rely on the equipment that's provided by Carling and other fire departments around. Chief Harrison from Carling is part of the Bijamatun, and so he is also a mutual aid coordinator for us. And so if that was a vehicle that we could look at, I'm sure he would have been right on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it sounded more positive when they did the presentation, mm-hmm. but it sounds like they're limited.
As far as I'm concerned, they're a fantastic volunteer-based organization that can be called out for missing children or, you know, hikers gone astray, stuff like that. But I can't imagine that they would have the ability to spinally immobilize somebody deep in the bush and then pull them out. So
it's just interesting with EMS. I mean, theoretically, I guess, we've set it up that we respond, but you can't do an awful lot when you get there. And EMS is pulling out of it. What if the fire department's pulled out of it?
Well, see, this is what we don't want to do.
No, I realize that, but the person who's injured in the bush.
Yes.
I mean,
we do BLS level training. So we have certain ability to package and transport certain people via sled and or via a snowmobile or so forth, up to a certain sort of degree of injury. If you fracture your leg, we can stabilize your leg. If you've got a laceration, we can stabilize your laceration. If you are in the bush hiking and you're having a heart attack, we can go in and we can help package you and pull you out with that. The limitation is going to be primarily where it comes to anything that can be lifelong debilitating, where we don't want to open ourselves up to that possibility that we don't have the specific training to be able to remove your snowmobile helmet, stabilize your spine and your neck, and then transport you out of the bush on a bumpy, nasty trail that is, if something was to happen, if they determined afterwards that the degree of injury did get worse because of this, then we're up the creek, right? And unfortunately, the Good Samaritan Act, which we rely on the Good Samaritan Act to a point, we also rely on the FPPA, the Fire Prevention Act, to a point, they provide a great deal of protection. Where they stop providing protection is where you go outside of your level of training. So that's kind of where we're setting the benchmark right now, is at the point of training, and then from there we're going to work to see how we can extend that point of training to still be able to offer that service. We're also going to try to work with the Perry Sound District Ambulance to say, okay, if we're providing, a hovercraft, which is commercially certified with a commercial captain, that can take you up to the island, what more could you possibly want with that? How can we adjust your policies and our own to be able to work together on this?
I just wonder, I just have reminiscences, I guess, of downloading from the upper level governments, where they used to look after these things, and now they're downloading it onto municipalities to do it, and not providing any resources or money to cover that. I mean, if they could even cover the training for the local fire departments, some kind of cost, that would be helpful. But it sounds to me like they're just throwing their hands up in the air and saying, okay, we'll leave that person out in the bush. As you say, there is an alternative for 2-3 hours sort of thing before they arrive. But I think it's putting an awful lot of pressure on local.
It is putting a lot of pressure on us, absolutely. And we are definitely very interested in finding a speedy resolution to this one that's going to be effective. In the meantime, that's why we made the amendment here, so that nobody can say you didn't provide a service that you were supposed to provide. Right? We quite simply cannot provide that service in all cases.
Is there any lobbying going on with the MPP and that sort of thing?
This is all very fresh.
Yeah.
This is all December 5th. It was when this was presented, so this is all very fresh. And we've all been going through our compliance stuff and everything in the meantime, as well as municipalities, right? So going forward in January, I'm sure you will see some movement in this. But we have to respect the fact that ambulance, at least at this point in time, is setting a certain degree of limitation that is a little bit cumbersome.
Okay, any further discussion, council? Recall the resolution, just to move that item Both carried. Can't let you go just yet. Now we're on to what number was it?
That's actually passing the bylaw.
Oh, okay. So this is resolution 25-538, moved by Councilor Ryland, second by Councilor Zulak. Be resolved the council of the corporation of the township of McKellar does hereby give bylaw number 2025-63, being a bylaw to amend bylaw number 2022-42, being a bylaw to establish and regulate a fire department within the township of McKellar, first and second reading, further give a third reading, and pass an open council the 16th day of December 2025. Any further discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Now, is he speaking to the circular material?
No.
Okay.
No, that's good.
That's it.
All great. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Have a good Christmas.
Thank you. You too. You're
on now to delegations and presentations. Resolution 25-539, moved by Councilor Keckin, second by Councilor Zulak. Be resolved the council of the corporation of the township of McKellar does hereby receive the deputation from the Lake Stewardship and Environmental Committee Chair, Jennifer Gent Fuller, presenting the committee's 2026 draft budget, the impact of wake boats on the lake environment, water sampling results in 2025, and activities conducted by the committee in 2025. All in 10 minutes. This is going to be great.
Maybe a minute more. So, as you said, there are four things that I'm presenting, and I will stop at the end of each item in order to take any questions concerning that item. So the first thing I'll address is the water report. Sampling for E. coli was conducted three times in the summer, at the end of June, July, and August. E. coli is measured by the lab in coliform units per 100 mils. There is always some E. coli in surface water from the soil in the lake or the riverbed, from animals in the water, and some from septic systems as well. However, water is now considered safe for swimming when the level of E. coli is 200 coliform units per 100 milliliters or lower. A heavy rain will drive the level of E. coli quite high until ultraviolet radiation from sunlight destroys a great percentage of this E. coli. Samples for E. coli were taken in six lakes, Manitowabing, McKellar, Gray Owl, Armstrong, Moffat, and Mary Jane Lakes. 66% of the samples had levels of less than 50 coliform units per 100 mils. 24% had values between 50 and 100, 7% had values between 1 and 200, and 3% had values of over 200. Results are posted on the MLCA website as well as the township website. So that meant that 97% of the samples showed water safe for swimming. In addition to sampling for E. coli, samples were collected for phosphorus and calcium levels in the same lakes. McKellar Township lakes are typically mesotrophic with phosphorus levels between 10 and 20 or just above 20 micrograms per liter being typical. This year, the spring sampling tended more towards the oligotrophic level with an average of 7 in the five smaller lakes and 10.5 in Manitowabing. In September, the five smaller lakes averaged readings of 18.4, where Manitowabing was quite low at 3.4. This low level may have resulted from the fact that the lake had not yet turned over, meaning that the phosphorus sitting in sediment at the bottom of the lake would not have risen to a higher level in the lake. It could also be from lower rainfall in the summer, which would have resulted in a lowered level of runoff from the land that is normal for a summer. Calcium levels are measured twice a year in the six lakes, with the exception of one outlier at Stewart Park in September. The calcium levels are usually between 4 and 6 milligrams, above the level required for survival of zooplankton in the benthic layer of the lake, which is an integral part of the food chain. Benthic sampling and analysis was done by Georgian Bay Atmosphere and again showed that our benthic population is typical for lakes in our region. Of interest, there was a new type of sampling done in Manitowabing Lake. MLCA participated in a Muskoka study on algae levels in the lake. So this required a sample to be taken every 2 weeks, and then those samples are frozen immediately and then analyzed at the end of the summer for the algae levels in them. The results aren't available yet. There was one reported sighting of blue-green algae in Manitowabing this summer, and that turned out to be negative for blue-green algae when it was sampled by the Ministry of the Environment. So that's the end of my report on the water sampling. Are there any questions on that aspect?
You still have enough volunteers to help with all of this?
We have quite a few volunteers. I think it numbers 17 now. So mainly they help out with the E. coli sampling. And there was one person that MLCA also found to do the all the blue-green algae testing. So yeah, we're doing well for volunteers. People seemed, well, it's nice getting out on the lake, you know, to do that, and it feels quite useful, so.
It sounds fairly positive for the results. I'm just wondering, any aberrations with geese or anything in particular areas?
There was the one area that was high for E. coli. It was there was one day it was over 300. Was the beach at Stewart Park, and I'm not quite sure what to do to alert people. We don't, of course, get the results back for probably until it's been 2 days after the sample was taken. They're very quick, but by that time the level might be lower. So we don't normally go out and resample. There was one time in the summer of 2024, when levels at in Moffett Lake in all three areas were 700, and they elected to resample and take the samples into the labs themselves, and that showed quite a drop in a couple of days. So by the time we get the level back, it's usually dropped a fair bit. But so what we've tried to do is some education around the fact that when it rains heavily, you know that the E. coli samples are going to be high, and the E. coli levels are going to be high. And in their report that is on the McKellar Township website, is a permanent part of that report, it says, you know, when it's high, then if you decide to go in swimming, you know, don't put the water in your mouth, try not to get it in your eyes and all that kind of thing. And so we're really hoping that gets through. So especially for the kids, you know, when they're splashing about in the beach.
Okay, thank you. Like you say, with the time lag, it's difficult to do any posting or let people know. So
yeah, so we're just trying to let them know when it's going to be high, and that seems to be the most, you know, when the geese have gone by. And when it rains heavily.
Okay, any further discussion on that portion? Okay, on to the next.
Thank you. So the second part is to do with what the Lake Stewardship and Environmental Committee activities were in 2025. This year we published a small book called Environmental Considerations for McKellar Township Residents. So this followed on.
Lost her voice.
Oh, she's frozen.
She's moving over here.
Yeah.
I don't know if they can hear us or not. We can't hear you right now, so.
Network connection.
Any volunteers assisting with that? This information was well received by residents.
Jennifer.
I've heard a lot of positive feedback about the Lake Protection Workbook and the other environmental information. So this year, The committee members personally distributed information to all the new households that were established since 2022. And this number is about 88 households. And so we made a list of those, and everybody took some and distributed them to mainly people in their area. And a couple of those properties hadn't been built on, so that's why I say approximately. So that was both the Lake Protection Workbook from Watersheds Canada and also our Environmental Considerations publication. The remainder we had 200 to distribute. The remainder were distributed to McKellar Township residents at the market, the library, and the township office. We had to be fairly sparse with that distribution, so we've budgeted this year for an extra printing of up to 200 more for the 2026 edition, and so if they're needed, or a portion thereof. We have started planning for a few changes that need to be included in the 2026 version. And we'll make another list of new households since last July, and again distribute this material by July 1st to those new households as we did last year. This booklet generated a lot of interest and a lot of positive feedback, and I heard quite a bit about it in both in the library and at the market, just chatting with people. We were very careful that it only went to McKellar Township residents because of the cost, of course. We distributed a brochure on healthy shorelands to all households in McKellar Township with the July tax bills. We also made two webinars for McKellar Township residents this year, one on preparing your property to avoid damage during a wildfire, and another on well maintenance, both with the assistance of the MLCA and made available on the McKellar Township webpage. We also did publicity and data gathering from community members on the location of turtle crossings in the township that went on all summer, and we're in the process of sourcing and choosing suitable signs for turtle reptile crossings. Are there any comments about that? We've talked about the turtle crossings at council prior to this.
Well, it's actually, you anticipated a couple of my questions, so going to McKellar residents, that makes sense. And also the fact that you're actually getting feedback from it, which I think I've asked regularly. I mean, do we know that these are effective? And so if you're speaking to people, they're commenting on it, there's discussion in the library, all that sounds very good. So.
Yeah, I mean, some people have been just so effusive about how much they appreciated that information. We had in mind that, you know, a lot of the, especially new people, haven't lived in the country before and just aren't as familiar as people who've been here for a long time are, but even people who've been residents for a long time are quite interested in the information. So we're very pleased with the reception of that. So I just basically at the market, I asked people if they lived in McKellar Township, and if they didn't, I didn't mention the book. So anyway, that's how we dealt with that.
Okay, good. Any further discussion from council? On to budget.
Okay. So I have attached the budget with your, you should have it in your package. It's been approved by the Lake Stewardship Committee to be presented to be forwarded to council. And we have, as I mentioned, we've budgeted for an initial printing of 200 copies of Environmental Considerations, as well as an additional printing of up to 200 more copies. Because they just weren't as available as we would have liked. We've included a new item in our budget this year, and that is the to have one test for PFAS. Also included in your handouts was a paper entitled Why Test for PFAS? that we've added this is the federal government has stated that municipalities should be testing for PFAS. In our opinion, the reason for conducting one test in Lake Manitowabing is to establish that they are in the lake water, and Carl Mitchell, who is on our committee and is a professor of limnology and quite knowledgeable about this, said that it's 100% certain that they will be in our lake water. So we just want to establish that they're there, and then we can publicize that they can be removed, because it's quite possible to, with the correct water treatment, to remove these PFAS so they're not in your drinking water. PFAS are chemicals that are added to manufacture items to make them water repellent, and they are found in diverse items such as cosmetics, clothing, fire suppressing foam, and food packaging, amongst others. Usually, new information on a potential water contaminant takes years to be integrated into the Canadian government's drinking water guidelines. However, if the concern about the harm caused by a contaminant is great enough, these concerns are addressed more quickly. And that's the case with PFAS. And so the concern results from findings that they can lead to kidney and testicular cancer, changes in liver enzymes, small decreases in birth weights, lower antibody response to some vaccines, increases in cholesterol levels, and pregnancy-induced hypertension and preeclampsia. And all of these, with the hypertension and preeclampsia, of course, that can lead to death. All of these health conditions can lead to further issues. And so we do know that they can be, the PFAS can be removed by granular activated carbon filters, reverse osmosis, and nanofiltration and anion exchange alone or combined with that. So that's the education that we are hoping to do. So just to look at the individual items on the budget, in terms of water testing, we've nudged up the amount to analyze the E. coli and phosphorus, because there normally is a small increase in that, and included the two benthites that the township pays for from the GBB testing. So the water total, water testing subtotal is 12,580. We budgeted $1,200 for the turtle signs, because they're going to need to be in.
I didn't.
I know.
Somebody phone Jennifer and tell her stop talking. We can't hear her.
Just a second.
Oh, there we go.
Sorry?
We're just having difficulty with the audio.
We're just having technical difficulties.
Oh.
No, the closed captions, not there.
Yeah.
Just try.
Yeah.
Did you want me to back up a bit?
Yeah, if you can go back a couple of minutes, Jennifer, maybe. I don't think more than that, but.
When I started talking about the detail of the budget?
Yeah. More the turtle signs.
Turtle signs.
So with the water testing, we nudged up that amount by about 5%, because normally that's what it climbs every year. We have the one PFA test in there, and it's expensive. It's $800. The standardizing solutions are just to calibrate our testing equipment, and the two benthic sites that the township pays for from GBB. So the water testing subtotal is 12,580. And on the education sign, there are the turtle signs and an initial printing of 200 new environmental considerations packages with a provision to be able to put up, to print 200 more up to that. Provision for one more flyer to come out, because we have a couple, quite a few things that are on the go for the next year. An honorarium for talks, we haven't yet spent that, so it's there. Most of the talks that we get, fortunately, we don't have to pay the speaker because they do it for a living. So the total for the education activities is 7,000, with a grand total of a possible 19,580. I'd like to note that I don't think we've ever come up to the budgeted level of our activities. We tend to say, well, this is what we could need, but we try to stay under that if we possibly can. So are there any questions about the budget?
Councilor Keckman?
Thank you for the work you guys do. You put a lot of effort to it, so appreciate that. But I did go through all the numbers, and I did see that a reasonable amount above and beyond what the actuals would be around 10%, and these numbers come in at 20. When you do all the, I didn't include the PFA testing in my calculations, but it comes out to that you're 28.5% above what the actuals would probably be. And if you could just hone that down a little closer to what you think that the actuals would be, so that would be approximately 12,791 if you're actually coming in close to the actuals, and then with the 10% would be closer to about 14,000. I think I just made one small calculation here before. It might be just off by a little bit, just because when we're off by 28%, if all the departments were off by that much, we would have to increase our tax levy by $1,294,000. So I think the closer we can get to the actuals, the more realistic the numbers we are. And then I think overall it works better for us to know how much across all departments is available and is not being over budgeted. And, it ends up that that money's not available to us for other projects. So we can just tone that down a little closer to the actuals, plus a bit of a contingency, that would be great.
Would you be able to email me your estimates, Mike? Would that
sure.
be okay?
Yeah.
Okay, that's great. We'll take a look at that. We have a meeting on Thursday, so I can get that done and present it again to the committee. On Thursday.
Yeah, it makes it difficult because, as you say, you wanted a bit of a cushion there if you wanted to do 200 more publications. And the fact that you're not spending that, which is good, I mean, it's not something that's put into a reserve that we've talked about before, like the other committees, where that's the budgeted item, whether it's actual or not. And whereas here, if the money is not spent, then it goes back into general government, I would assume. So
yes.
As you say, that may affect our bottom line here, but if it's not being spent, I mean, all the more to thank them for not meeting what they had said. And I know what you're saying, if they all did the same, but they're not all doing the same, and they get an opportunity to come and speak to us through the projects, etc. Now, I'd be a bit more concerned, I would say, if it was carried over into a reserve. So it wouldn't be the actual figure as such, like some of the other committees, but this one's not. So that's just my thought on it.
So our actuals in 2025 were 15,464, and we do have new items in this one, the extra printing of the environmental considerations and also the PFA test. But anyway, if you wanted to send those, I can take a look. But no, we've quite deliberately not asked for it to flow through to the next year.
Okay, any further questions from council at this point? Okay, and the last item?
So,
Wake surfing, yes, okay.
Wake surfing, yes. So the fourth item concerns the presence and operation of wake boats on Lake Manitowabin. And so this part of the presentation is really just for your edification, because we have been talking about this issue through the fall. There was a Safe Quiet Lake study done in the summertime, and then the clerk forwarded us a video that was presented to the whole council, a short little piece. It's definitely an issue that's caused a lot of concern on other lakes, given rise to opposition to the presence of wake boats in many areas. In some cases, these boats have been banned, and so I just wanted to talk about why it's an issue, and what the possibilities are for dealing with it. I do have a PowerPoint that I can share. Okay. Now let's see. I have to go back into Zoom and share.
Is it possible just to summarize what? Okay.
Okay, are you able to see the slide that says the impact of wake boats on the lake environment?
Yes.
Okay, good. So, I just wanted to go over briefly why wake boats make bigger waves. I had to look at this information myself and learn it, and so I thought, well, probably everybody else is in the same boat, if you'll pardon the pun. So, wake boats have a very deep V-cull design, and that's designed to make the wake that they make quite a bit larger and higher. They also have ballast tanks that fill with about 5,600 pounds of water to increase the boat's draft. And this also, because it makes the boat sit lower in the water, helps them create larger, more powerful waves by making by sitting lower. The other way they make more waves is they have hydrofoils and trim tabs to enhance the wakes, and they have a wake shaping surf gate to change the shape of the wake. And so this is all in the interest of making water skiing, or it's called wake surfing in this case, more like ocean surfing. Although when I ask why they don't go out in the Great Lakes where they wouldn't do as much damage, it's apparently because it's too wavy out there for them. So that seems to be a little bit of a conundrum. So the next slide is that these wake boats create damage, and they cause inconvenience to cottagers as well. Damage to docks and causing people to have upgrades to docks to prevent the boat damage. So in the Lake Stewardship and Environmental Committee, there are 8 people now, and 3 of us had difficulties out of 8. So one fellow had to repair damage to his dock, and also had to change the moorings on his dock, so that rather than just tying up to the side of the dock, the way he always had, he had to institute a system whereby the boats would be suspended at the side of the dock so that they wouldn't be smashed against the dock with these waves. And that cost him $17,000 in repairs and upgrades. Also, it's causing damage to water lines. So the same unfortunate fellow all of a sudden one day the water line stopped working, and he is a scuba diver, so he went underneath to look and see what happened. And he could watch the water line just wave up and down, oscillate. And so when the company brought the old water line up, it was full of holes. The lake bottom is quite rocky near his area, and then the water line was going banged against the rocks when these wake boats went by. So wake boats also threw up more sediment and increased the sediment that's suspended in the lake water, which means that people will then have to change their filters. People who take their water out of the lake will be changing their filters more often. Another member on our committee is right at the shore in the large part of the lake. And no matter how far away the wake boat is, it causes so much turbulence and at such high waves that his grandchildren have to come out of the lake or they get knocked over with these waves. And additionally, his dock is rocking, and the boat's rocking to such an extent that they can't actually climb into their boat while the wake boats are active in the center of the lake. There's also endangerment to other boaters, and unfortunately, my husband and I ran into this directly. We went out on the lake for our last day of water sampling for phosphorus and calcium on September the 26th, and we were in an aluminum fishing boat that's about 14 feet long and 3 feet deep. And we were in the large part of the lake, but just going past the bay, the entrance to the bay, going into the camp. And I was facing the stern of the boat, and I saw the boat pass by us. And then suddenly, just after he got past us, he went into wake mode, and an enormous trough opened beside us. And it looked to me like it was 2 to 3 times as deep as our boat, and I thought, we're going to flip. But my husband is a very experienced boater, and he immediately turned the boat 90 degrees so that instead of flipping, we went down into the trough. I think the angle was about 45 degrees, and then up the back of the trough, again around 45 degrees, and then shot out of the water and went down on the surface with a big smack. So I had all my water sampling equipment with me, which included a 30-meter cable, a quadrupro cable, which is used to measure various lake chemistry items like pH and temperature and salinity and that kind of thing. And been working perfectly, but that day we were at 5 or 6 different sites, and it was quite frustrating because I couldn't get it to work. Every once in a while I would get a couple of readings, but I couldn't, it just had stopped working. And I didn't really realize that it was the turbulence, but also that day my hip started hurting. And I really think that it was that incident with the wake boats. I had to send in the 30-meter cable, and for evaluation, I was hoping it could be repaired, but it's got little fractures all the way through it, and so the MLCA has to buy a new quadrupro 30-meter cable at a cost of $3,000. So this is a very difficult question, you know, because we're wrestling with interfering with some cottagers' enjoyment of the lake and of their property, but on the other hand, seems to be a fair amount of disruption of the enjoyment of by other people. So this is a difficult thing to evaluate. There's also increased shoreline erosion, so wake boats can produce wakes that are 2 to 3 times larger than the wakes of regular boats, require up to 600 to 900 feet to dissipate. Now, I think those numbers are low. I read some research that the wave energy from wake boats is actually 5 to 17 times higher than a normal speedboat, and the waves are 3 to 9, they have 3 to 9 times more energy than the waves of a regular powerboat. And if you look at that, how long it takes to dissipate, Manitowabing is about 1.3 kilometers wide, so that's about 650 meters to the center of it, but I think 600 feet is a low estimate of how far these go. So the erosion of the shoreline caused by waves is sped up, damaging shoreline habitat and removing shoreline vegetation as well. Some people, I read in Michigan, along Lake Michigan, are armoring the shoreline with riprap, like putting stones. And that has financial implications for them, as well as environmental ramifications, because when you interfere with the shoreline, then you're reducing habitat, reducing biodiversity, and with the hardening of the shoreline, you're increasing rainwater runoff because there's no opportunity for it to be absorbed, for the rainwater to be absorbed.
Okay, so Jennifer, I don't want to cut you short here, but it's been going on quite some time. I'm just wondering, do you have any suggested solutions from the committee? I think you were looking at a VOR. Could we get to those? And
sure. I'll jump. Through Transport Canada, and the Canada Shipping Act, the vessel operation restriction regulations allows local authorities, and that in this case would be the Township of McKellar Council, to ask the federal government to restrict the use of pleasure craft and commercial vessels on all Canadian bodies of water in order to improve safety, protect the environment, and ensure the public interest. And so I just wanted to, this is something that the LSEC is discussing, and I wanted to give you a heads up on that. And if we decide to request that, so you'll have some background. We do have a fair bit of data with the Safe Quiet Lakes survey that I mentioned that was conducted this summer. I was able to get that raw data and separate out the contributions from Manitowabing. And so there were 7,000 participants in that Safe Quiet Lake survey, and 2% of them were from Manitowabing, which is 140, which is quite a decent survey number for Manitowabing. I think the last I heard there were about 1,200 waterfront cottages in the township. And so in all the categories, concern about wake boats being a danger to swimmers, causing damages to docks, to people in other vessels, shoreline erosion, the people from Manitowabing, from McKellar, over 50% were highly concerned about that. And so I think that shows that there is a fair bit of interest in amongst the residents of McKellar Township in doing something about wake boats. We'll just have to keep talking about it, but we do want to start the discussion, and in particular the committee is concerned that the people who might be interested in paying $245,000 for a wake boat need to know that there is some concern and a possibility of some action. So that's where we are. Sorry to go on so long.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from council? Councillor Zulak?
Jennifer, you just mentioned the survey, and you said, I think, did you say 160 cottagers?
140, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So did you do any permanent residents also that are on the lake?
So these are anonymous responses. It was advertised. Here is the link to the Safe Quiet Lake survey, and people volunteered to go on. There's no personal identification, so I wouldn't be able to identify where people were, whether they were. There was a question. I do have the data broken out for Manitowabi, and I can send that to you. I think almost all of them were resident on the lake.
Okay. I just want to make sure that it's both.
So, like I say, it was a survey that was voluntary, so...
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, any further discussion, questions? Okay, I think that's the end of the topics, is it?
Yes, that's
okay.
It.
I appreciate that.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. I'll put this out to council then and call the question. All those in favor, the original resolution, which we should have done earlier, but that was to have her speak. We never voted on it, so I'll call the question. All those in favor. None opposed, Gary. Resolution 25-540, moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Ryland. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of Township McKellar does hereby approve the minutes of the December 2nd, 2025 regular meeting of Council as circulated. Any discussion of those minutes? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. On to item 15.1, planning matters. We have resolution 25-541, moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Kekkonen. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the proposed consent application number B18/2025, Bastiansen, to create two new waterfront lots fronting on Ryan Lake in part of Lot 22, Concession 13, Township of McKellar, accessed by a private right of way, Water's Edge Trail, from Balton Road, and a lot addition to a neighboring property, as applied for by Virginia Bastiansen in application number B18/2025 McKellar, and be subject to the following conditions. Number one, payment of a fee in lieu of parkland is required in the Township of McKellar fee bylaw. Should be fees and charges, I guess. But two, that the applicant enter into a section 5126 consent agreement to A, indemnify the Township of McKellar of any responsibility or liability for the maintenance of Water's Edge Trail, and B, allow the owners of the existing and proposed lots to cross and maintain a portion of the municipal road allowance for access over Water's Edge Trail, and C, implement the recommendations of the Fry Corps Ecological Services Memorandum dated September the 25th, 2025. And number three, an easement be registered concurrently with the Section 5126 consent agreement for the public lands the owners intend to cross and maintain. Four, that the lot addition lands be rezoned to rural zone, RU. And five, 911 addressing for the proposed new lots. Six, that a section 118 land titles restriction be registered on title to bind the lot addition and benefiting lands. And seven, payment of any applicable planning board fees. Now, I'll open this up for discussion, but we have Patrick online. He's been waiting patiently, thank you. And maybe just anything, that this has gone through a few changes over the time. And maybe Patrick could speak to it. We have the applicant here as well. So, Patrick? You still on?
Sorry, there we go, Mr. Mayor. I am here. Having a little bit of technical issues this evening, but I am here.
Great.
Yes, this application has been around the block a couple of times with a couple of changes, but as you mentioned, two waterfront lots on Ryan Lake, and now a lot addition to neighboring property, actually on the other side of Water's Edge Trail. But the Section 118 land titles restriction will allow the lot addition lands to be added to the neighbor's lands on title, so that those lands can only be sold together. So this lot addition solves the issue of a lot with lesser frontage on Balsam Road than what would normally be allowed. Happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Or maybe we can ask the applicant as well. I think you've been through this a few times to get it right.
Yep, yeah. We tweaked it now, and I think everything's the way it's, everybody agreed last time too would probably work. So yeah, the neighbors have agreed to purchase that piece of land, and we've come up with a deal, so everything should be great on our end if everything's good on your end. So.
Okay, I'm trying to look at the actual lot addition where the boundaries are. I see a lot of dark lines here. I don't know whether you have it in front of you, Patrick, but does it go right up to the point where it's very narrow, or
basically where it goes to? Yeah, right to the point where it's very narrow there.
Okay.
So that's where the private right of way starts, is right at that narrow point.
Right.
So between the narrow point and Balsam Road would be the. There's kind of a sliver there, and then there's a piece that goes off to the right that's sort of a rectangular shape.
Okay, so I guess the question is, this piece of Water's Edge Trail that will now be owned by the neighbors? That's part of the lot addition?
Yeah, not actually the Water's Edge Trail. The piece beside it is called Part 10. I don't know if what you have says Part 10 on it. That's the kind of the narrow sliver part.
Right.
That's actually just private land. It doesn't have a right of way over it or anything. It's just, yeah. So basically, when they created the private right of way that's past Water's Edge Trail, like back 20 years ago when they divided all this land up, was when Water's Edge Trail was actually created. So that basically the people behind Water's Edge Trail would have to travel over Water's Edge Trail to get to the private right-of-way. So that piece beside Water's Edge Trail, that Part 10, is basically just land, just private land.
Well, I guess that's a question, and I think, Patrick, you alluded to it as well. The Water's Edge Trail doesn't actually follow the road allowance. It seems to be off, separate from. So it seems to be a combination. And I guess the question is, the people on Water's Edge Trail, how do they access from Balsam? What property are they crossing? If the lot addition is going over now, it looked to me like, unless I've got the wrong map in front of me, that part of Water's Edge Trail will now be in different ownership.
Do you want me to answer that?
Yes, okay.
yeah, so basically the maps you're looking at, it's a little bit off. So basically the laneway, I'll call it, the Water's Edge Trail is actually the right, like basically what we're supposed to be using to access the private right-of-way.
Okay.
We start out on whoever made the laneway, basically, back whenever that was done, kind of did it wrong, basically. So it was supposed to all be on Water's Edge Trail, the municipal right-of-way, but whoever made the laneway veered it off a little bit onto that private land. So with this 1526 that we're doing, that allows us to use Water's Edge Trail and be able to maintain it and everything. That laneway, the piece that we're actually using that's on the private land, which is basically trespass right now, will have to just be shifted over onto the municipal right of way. So once we're actually legally allowed to use the municipal right of way,
right,
it'll just be shifted over a little bit, so everything will be proper. So
okay, no, that makes sense. I'm just looking at that private piece of property. I'm just wondering who actually owns that chunk in there.
Yeah, so that's basically myself right now,
right.
Or with Virginia's names on it. But yeah, so basically myself, because we live in the back end of all this,
right.
And then there's another property, and so everybody's actually trespassing right now, which we never even knew that until this all came about. cleans everything up doing all this. It'll ship the laneway over where it's supposed to be. Just get everything like the way it should have been done years ago. So.
Yep, no, that shifting makes sense.
Yep.
Any other questions from council? I guess maybe just get Patrick's advice on this too. I noticed that the lot addition rezoned to rural, even though it's going to a waterfront lot, and it's part of that, but it still has to be zoned rural.
I believe so, Mr. Mayor, because it will not, in fact, physically have water frontage.
Right. And I'm just wondering if that actual agreement that we have for to do that, I know we did it before, the 118 land titles restriction, that can be removed without township getting involved, just by the two owners themselves?
I believe so, yes. If the both parties agree to remove it, it can be done.
Okay. But that would leave the township out of it, so whatever they agree to, we can't see that happening in the future, we hope, so.
Yeah, I spoke to a lawyer about that, and she did say it is just between the two landowners to come up with the, or like, you know, to do that 118, and yeah, so the township, basically, once you okay that to happen, it's just the lawyer work legally to do it between me and the new owner, so there shouldn't be anything the township has to do about that. So.
Okay, any further discussion? Have to commend the person who genius hooked up on or come up with the idea of a lot addition to the other lot to take care of the road frontage. I think that resolved a lot of issues. So, yeah.
I'll just
yes, wait. Councilor Zulak.
So, just in the motion, David, in number four, what did read that again? Because it mine says that the retained lot be rezoned to the rural.
Right, this has been changed. I know that's what the original said.
Okay,
now
so
it's a lot addition.
So it says that the lot addition retained?
Be rezoned to rural, not
okay.
Retained. Just the lot addition. Retained.
The lot addition, okay.
Yeah, retained is gone. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Further discussion? Okay, call the question then. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried.
Finally, yeah?
Finally. I know there's still a lot more steps, but.
Oh, just we'll keep Paul for another resolution.
Oh, okay. Oh, great. This is for 15.1.
Yeah.
Still? Okay. And resolution 25-542, moved by Councilor Kekkonen, second by Councilor Zulak. Whereas consent application number B18/2025, Bastiansen permits the creation of two new waterfront lots, fronting on Ryan Lake, being part of Lot 22, Concession 13, Township of McKellar. And whereas the applicant intends to service the lots with electrical power, and whereas the utility easement may be required over the municipal public lands, and whereas the applicant has been in discussions with Hydro One, and Hydro One will not provide a servicing layout prior to the registration of the new lots, and whereas it is currently unknown whether the required utility route will traverse private or public lands in order to service the two lots, now therefore be it resolved the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar hereby supports, in principle, the granting of a utility easement over the public lands legally described as PIN 521-270771, subject to final review and approval. Discussion? This is probably a situation, Hydro can pretty well do what it wants anyway, I mean, where they put the lines. And that's the type of property, it doesn't really lead other than to your lands that may be sold in the future, but it's not really something for the public to access up Water's Edge Trail. Although, keeping in mind, because of that agreement, that it is still public property and people could go on it,
yeah.
Theoretically, but they probably wouldn't. And as far as the Hydro, I don't know what stage you're at.
Just discussions, basically,
yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think, as I say, I don't think council would be too concerned with where the lines are on that public piece of property if there are no thoughts of the future development of that or people accessing through there. But that would be the only thing. We've run into it before. The reason with Hydro at our transfer station, for instance, I mean, they plumped a Hydro pole right where we wanted to expand the entrance.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would have cost us a great fortune to get that removed. We worked around it and blasted some of the rock away, but it's unfortunate that usually they just go in wherever they require. There's some negotiation, I guess, discussion, but they tend to get their way where they want to put it. But this one shouldn't affect the township in any way, I don't think. So.
No.
Any further discussion? Well, it's in principle, whatever that means. So we'll call a question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried.
Thanks, Paul.
Okay. Well, thank all of you. And, thanks, Patrick.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Good night.
Yeah, thanks, Patrick.
Thank you. Just
have a good night.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks.
On to 16.1, resolution 25-543. Move for Councillor Kekkonen, second for Councillor Zulak. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby received the meeting minutes of the 911 Management Committee meeting for November 27, 2025, for information purposes. Discussion?
So yeah, the 911 committee is getting going after a hiatus for a couple of years. So I think there's a few little hiccups to be ironed out. I did send the chair roll, actually that's another one of the hiccups. There's no indication in the minutes of the previous meeting, I think it was in May of 2025, that there was any vote on who the chair or the co-chair should be. And it's not the original chair or co-chair who were there previously before the hiatus. So I think at some point there actually has to be a vote to determine among the members, and as well that the chair has a copy of who are the actual appointed members, so that, as you can see from the minutes, there is, I think it indicated there was quite a few people in attendance, and so not every one of those people have a vote, but I wasn't paying attention closely, but I do think people were voting that are not appointed members, so just a few little hiccups along the way there, but the main point is that, and then there was another thing that the NG 911 agreement hadn't been signed by one of the members, and that was not discussed at the meeting until I brought it up, so it is moving forward, and that final member is going to be signing so that the OPP can move to the new generation 911, which is moving from copper lines to a digital platform. So it is important that it actually it prevents the OPP from moving to next generation until the agreement is signed. So yeah, it is important that this committee still exists, and because there are changes continually along the way. So,
how often do they meet, Mike?
Twice a year.
Twice.
Well, that's good. It's being straightened out then, and as future chair, you'll make sure that.
Well, the current individual who sat in the chair is doing a great job, so I would
support
that to continue on.
Well, that's good. I think that's commendable that you check those things to make sure it's all done legally. It all straightened out. Any further discussion? Call a question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. To 16.2, resolution 25-544, moved by Councillor Zulak, second by Councillor Ryland. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby received the North Bay Parry Sound District Health Unit Medical Officer of Health report to the Board of Health on November the 26th, 2025, for information purposes. Any discussion? Councilor Zulak?
I just have a question. We always get the North Bay Sound District Health Unit. Whatever happened to the Parry Sound Muskoka?
It's been moved. We're not part of the Muskoka, I don't think.
Well, part
of the North Bay now.
Yeah, because I remember I was on the board for the Parry Sound Muskoka, and they did the new building over in Gravenhurst and everything, and then at some point we were removed, and we go with North Bay now?
Right. The new building, at least they talked about it years back in North Bay, so
so.
Yes, we did pay for that building in North Bay too, so.
Jeepers.
We got our fingers everywhere and.
Yeah, okay.
Well, we'd asked, they had a public meeting, if you recall, in Whitestone, in Dutchard. And that's where they talked about the actual people who would sit on the board and the numbers and the representation. And I put together a scenario for them, getting more representatives from the West, but that didn't fly at all.
No.
North Bay got the major. And so we have one representative. We had one for quite a few years, and now we have Mayor Perry Sound as a representative. But we just have one for the whole West Perry Sound on that board, and it's pretty well, it's top heavy for North Bay. So they're the ones that organize what goes on. And yeah, that was changed quite a few years back. I remember you sat on that.
Yeah, just curious.
Call the question then, all those in favor? None opposed, carried. Item 16.3, resolution 25-545, moved by Councilor Keckin and second by Councilor Hulak. Resolved the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the North Bay Perry Sound District Health Unit Board of Health meeting minutes for September the 24th, 2025, for information purposes. Discussion? Call the question, all those in favor? None opposed, carried. To 16.4, and resolution 25-546, moved by Councilor Ryland, second by Councilor Zulak. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby received the Lake Stewardship and Environmental Committee meeting minutes for October the 16th, 2025, for information purposes. Discussion? Call the question, all those in favor? None opposed, carried. To 16.5, resolution 25-547, moved by Councilor Keckinen, second by Councilor Zulak. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the McKellar Township Historical Committee meeting minutes from November the 5th, 2025, for information purposes. Discussion? Call the question, all those in favor? None opposed, carried. To 16.6, resolution 25-548, moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Keckman. Be resolved, the Council, the Corporation of the Township of McKellar, does hereby receive the District of Perry Sound Social Services Administration Board Chief Administrative Officer's Report for November 2025 for information purposes. Discussion? Again, you're just running these off for us. Not everybody's receiving them from them. Okay, appreciate that. Call the question, all those in favor? None opposed, carried. On to 16.7, resolution 25-549, moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Keckinen. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby received the North Bay Perry Sound District Health Unit Personnel Policy, Labor / Employee Relations Committee of the Board of Health meeting minutes for April 23rd, 2025, for information purposes. Discussion? Call the question, all those in favor? None opposed, carried. On to 17.1, resolution 25-550, moved by Councilor Ryan, second by Councilor Zulak. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the McKellar Market Staff Report for the 2025 season from Market Manager Jan Gibson for information purposes. Discussion? Very detailed report again, and looks like a very successful season. And with the vendors, the visitors, and I think the plug-in to keep it in that location, we're going to keep having that. So if that discussion arises again, it looks like she certainly is advertising that that be the location. And I'm not sure about the parking, whether that was a concern or if anybody heard anything.
You mean this year?
Yes, this year.
People. Nick?
Sorry? I'm having lots of trouble hearing tonight, I can tell you that. So.
Yeah.
With the market manager report, I'm just saying it's a very positive report. Everything is looking good, but I'm just wondering if there are any problems still with the parking or whether it's been resolved. I know nobody's parking out front.
Yeah.
Are there still parking areas that people are... I know they park very close to intersections, and there's not too much you can do. You can't go that far to keep track of them.
No.
And I don't think the OPP are really involved in patrolling,
no.
are they?
No.
No.
And there are people that just blatantly and disregard the no parking signs and park wherever the hell they want.
Right.
One guy threatened to run me over when I went, and I was being polite and just asking. I said, are you aware you're not allowed to park here? Well, there's no parking sign.
Yeah.
And he threatened to run me over in service. Right? I have no idea whether he would have tried or anything like that. And I was standing beside the vehicle, so it'd be kind of hard to run me over. But in any event, yeah, and there are just some people that are just not very nice. So, but for the most part, people park reasonably. But again, if we could add some space in the park, in the grassy area, and I know we need MTO approval and stuff like that, and not likely to happen. But yeah, there's definitely, at most, I think we get maybe... 50 or 60 parking spots in Minerva, plus the vendors, but I mean, they're just parked on grass at the back anyway, but it's a constant problem. But what worries me the most is people parking at public works and walking across the road. And again, there are some people that come down 124 at a very high rate of speed. Sometimes you can't because there's just so much traffic, so that's not really a risk. But for other people that have very clear mobility issues, it's a real risk for them to be walking at all down the side of a highway. But thankfully, I've never seen anything come close there, and hopefully we never will, but it's a problem for sure. But yeah, and as for parking further down towards the village, I mean, yeah, just chaos. So.
Well, we had, when that bridge was put in, we lobbied to have sidewalk put in. They weren't even going to put in sidewalks.
Mm-hmm.
On the bridge, and so we said we were just opening up our Minerva Park at that time, and so they agreed to it and they did put a sidewalk in. I'm
mm-hmm.
wondering if that's another possibility of having, since we're using the public works now, and that was even frowned upon, I guess, in the past, but
yeah.
Of extending a sidewalk so you're not walking along the edge of the road, whether MTO would be interested in something like that, but
yeah.
Already shaking your head, so maybe it's already been broached, I don't know.
The community safety zone go that far, like past it, or to Minerva and past
mm-hmm.
it?
Past it, yeah.
Okay, so.
But without providing any things to add to the safety, so that's the thing.
Yeah. But, I mean, one thing that Rob Gibson did was get a whole bunch more no parking signs printed off this year, so that we put them ever, including the entranceway in from the west end of Minerva. Because people pull in there, I swear to God, people ignore any sign you put there. Pretty much guaranteed by putting it there, they're going to park there. But, and I walk over and say, you really can't, because then people can't get by you.
Yeah.
And then that's a real risk, or they'll scrape up your car. That's usually a convincing argument. But it's just, you'd have to have about like 10 marshals just standing there saying, get out, you can't stay here. But and there's three of us now that are doing that. So Rob and me and Aaron, I can't remember Aaron's last name, but and it wouldn't matter, I think, if we had five or six. I mean, it would help, but people just park wherever the heck they want to park. So, but the vast majority of people, I think, are the best part about doing this is you get to talk to a lot of people because they come in and there isn't a parking spot right that moment. So I usually have a chat with them and things like that. So a lot of people are very happy, very friendly, and frankly, when they're coming back out with all their butter tarts and other things, they're really happy. So, and so I find it engaging. And in July, for whatever reason, there was an awful lot of people with U.S. plates that were coming into the parking area. And I just asked them, well, why are you coming here? Like, you didn't drive here just for the market. And no, but I mean, they've got friends or they've got a cottage or whatever, and it's, I would think on the highest day, maybe there would have been 15% of people there with American plates, so
mm-hmm.
that's really quite something, and it shows how broad the attraction is, anyhow. And lots of other people, I just asked them, you know, where you're coming from today, and basically from quite a stretch all around us, which is good, so.
Yeah.
And we were lucky with weather, too, other than one day, but
yeah.
anyhow, so. Anyway, Yeah.
Okay, any further discussion?